time with Uncaged.
Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple and you're locked on to the UK's hottest politics and music podcast. Each week, I bring you the rawest takes on the big stories making the news, always joined by a very special guest. Then, I pleasure your mind, body and soul with the freshest, most banging international music going. What's up, everyone? I am Steve Topple. It is Sunday, the 24th of March, and that can only mean one thing. It's this week's edition of Topple Uncaged. The world is going to hell in a handcart. Brexit is imploding. The far right is still on the rise in the EU. Donald Trump and Israel are making bizarre moves in the Middle East. And disabled people are being systematically abused by the medical profession and media. And at the center of this madness is that latter entity, the media, be it the corporate media or the establishment media. They take up every one of the roles of the four horsemen of the apocalypse in this increasingly dystopian world we're living in. And while I've repeatedly said that there are many factors which have led us to this point, not least 30 years or more of rampant corporatist capitalism and neoliberalism, the media have been happily singing this tune as well. It's the 1980s that Chomsky first peddled the idea of manufacturing consent. That is where the media is essentially a propaganda tool of the establishment, and nothing has changed. Woman everywhere in every occupation, I find themselves in some situation. Man, I abuse their position with insinuation. So a big portion of the blame for all this carnage that we see around us has to be levelled at the door of the corporate establishment press. Over the nation, no longer shall we act mistaken. But then suddenly this week, they think they can change their minds and suddenly start telling the truth. If you look at the BBC's coverage of Theresa May's speech and the implosion of Brexit, you have the likes of Laura Koonsberg and Nick Robinson suddenly going in on the Prime Minister. In another scandal surrounding the smearing of disabled people by the press, you have The Guardian and The Times, both guilty of doing this, then trying to fool us all by putting out little articles by certain commentators saying, we support you really. The greatest trick the media ever pulled was making us believe it was on our side. Well, no more. You want to bring down the system? We have to start with the media first. So on that note, of course, in Topple Uncaged, I will be giving you an alternative viewpoint to the snivelling corporate press. What they say ain't so. Protégé, who's on next week's show, is quite right in this track. We need to stop believing the camera show and quit. It's the UK's quickest current affairs roundup. It is Plucked News. Yes, it is the UK's quickest news roundup from me. It is Plucked News. 5 news stories, 5 minutes. Can I fit them all in and give you the information that you need? Of course I can. If you're ready, we will get going in 3, 2, 1. And first off, there's no link to a story this week because it is all about Brexit. Sorry, Brexit. Yes, we've had the Revoke Article 50 petition hitting over 4 million signatures at the time I recorded this, which was Saturday afternoon. Also on Saturday afternoon, we had the delightful People's Vote March ending up at a Waitrose somewhere, I'm sure. And with the EU giving us an extension till April the 12th, or if Theresa May gets her deal to pass May the 22nd, the chaos is just absolutely compounded. If you would like to read why I think the People's Vote March is a load of bollocks, there is a separate article I have written on this. It will be linked in the show notes. But moreover, what Brexit is endemic of is the fact that the system around the world, the corporatist capitalist mechanisms that are in place, is absolutely collapsing around our ears. I mean, it's ironic, really. So the UK's crony capitalist system is effectively imploding. imploding within itself, while trying to decide whether it wants to stay part of the European crony capitalist corporatist system, which is effectively imploding within itself, and the EU is trying to keep its place in the globalized crony corporatist capitalist system, which is effectively imploding within itself. And then when you look at this on a more micro level, this has essentially gone from Tory infighting, where they couldn't decide between themselves what to do about the EU, and therefore couldn't come to agreement. It went to parliamentary infighting and arguing about what to do about the EU. So then they shoved it back to us, with people across the country arguing and infighting about what to do about the EU. So again, on a micro level, we see our political system in absolute chaos and collapsing as well. But ultimately, this is what it's really all been about. It is nothing to do with leaving the EU or staying in the EU. It is a death throes of the system as we know it. It is collapsing around our ears. You see it across the world. And I remain unconvinced how staying wedded to the corporate capitalist EU is going to solve any of that. And for story number two, I'm off to my mate Alex Tiffin at Universal Credit Sufferer, and he reported that Theresa May reported to police for endangering MP safety. Now, I'm not going to go too much in on this story, as me and Alex are going to discuss it later on, as he is a guest on this week's podcast. However, within the grand scheme of things, as I previously said, our collapsing globalised system, this is a perfect example of one of the symptoms of this. Yes, the Prime Minister's speech this week, where she effectively sprayed up in Parliament, shooting down every MP around her and leaving an absolute bloodbath, was pretty much that. It was an aggressive speech, which, as Alex pointed out, could well put MP's safety at risk. And it did. At the very next day, Labour MP Andrew Grimm was attacked. So why is an example of the globalised system collapsing? Because Theresa May is one of these leaders who is thrashing around, not knowing what to do, literally running out of options and running out of control. But here's the problem. While I think what Alex has done is great, reporting her to the police, and it's making a very bold statement, is it really going to change anything? Will anything happen? If you look back to 2015 and Tory election fraud, which got us to this Brexit point in the first place, the omens for it do not look good. And this is a challenge when we are dealing with a globalised collapsing system. It will try every trick in the book to try and stop us pulling it down. And for story number three, I'm going to my mate Freya Lockley at the Canary, and she reported that the establishment media has launched a vicious war on chronically ill people. This is the story of myalgic encephalomyelitis, or ME, the disease it's commonly known as, and the notorious PACE trial, a corporate-led study which says people with ME can get better by doing cognitive behavioural therapy and graded exercise therapy. This is a fairly complex story, but if you want the full background, there will be links to articles I've written about it in the show notes. But essentially what's happened is the medical profession has accepted advice from a study that was funded not only by the Department for Work and Pensions, but researched by people who also have links to the private insurance industry, that people with ME can essentially think themselves better and do some exercise to get well again. This was, of course, all about saving the DWP money, as it was shaving insurance companies' money, but the medical profession has lapped this up, leaving people with ME in chronic pain, chronically bad mental health, and essentially abused, neglected, and left to rot. But now, people living with ME are fighting back, but what's happening? The establishment media and establishment medical profession are painting them as abusive activists, as militant people who don't represent most people living with ME, and we've seen a flurry of stories in the press this week to compound that thought. Because of what some of the real causes ME could well be, and because of what some of the real treatments could well be, the establishment medical profession and media are desperately fighting back against this. As I said, we have the globalised system collapsing, we have leaders thrashing around trying to save it, and then of course what happens is they turn on people next. The situation with ME and PACE trial is a classic example of this. And I would say to all campaign groups involved with sick and disabled people, regardless of whether you know much about ME or not, you need to get behind the ME community, because we are all fighting the same enemy, the collapse of the globalised corporate capitalist system. So what's the solution to this collapsing globalised corporatist capitalist system? Well, for story number four, I'm off to Owen Jones in The Guardian, because he thinks he's got one. He reported that Labour's been mocked for calling an election. Now it's the only way out. I apologise in advance if I've insulted anyone with my bad impression of an accent from Stockport. So is Owen Jones right? I mean, all the options we have on the table currently are, accept Theresa May's deal over Brexit, no deal and crash out on WTO terms. We, of course, have the people's vote, which would contain an automatic entitlement to membership of a Waitrose benefit scheme, or we have a general election, as Owen Jones says. Look, I'm torn between crashing out with a no-deal Brexit and a general election, I have to say. Because for me, herein lies the ultimate problem. Remain in the corporatist, capitalist, crony EU, and just be dealing with the same issue that we're dealing with in the corporatist, capitalist, crony UK, but on an even larger scale, where change from within over the past few decades has never happened. Or we try and put someone like Corbyn into power and start changing things in this country with the hope that it will spread and send a message to other countries across the world. What to do? It is a real tricky one. And meanwhile, if you want to know how the media sews all this together, as I said in my introduction to this week's episode, I'm back to the Canary for story number 5 of my mate John Shaftay, and he reported that a guest exposes how BBC talk shows dumb down debate. This is the story of Rutger Bregman, a left-wing economist and historian, who was on This Week, and he went public with exactly what was going on behind the scenes. I won't read it all out to you because he put a very long Twitter thread out, but in short, they wanted him to talk about Brexit, they wanted him to talk about the European Union when he was supposed to be on about his book, a book which it transpires none of the panel or production team had even bothered to read. Essentially, they had him on to try and push a certain line of propaganda, but he was having none of it. Good for him. But essentially, this shows the challenge we face with everything I've just talked about, that we have a complicit corporate establishment media who are desperately doing the bidding of those in power and trying to maintain the system. This is why it's so important that you follow news outlets like the Canary, keep reading our articles, and also keep obviously listening to this podcast, Topple Uncaged. We have to take down the system's methods of power, and getting rid of the corporate establishment media is one of those first steps. As people often say on Twitter, hashtag change the media. And I haven't even got time to mention everyone's favourite bullshit celebrity, Yuri Geller, coming out writing to Theresa May saying he would telepathically stop Brexit. Can you make yourself telepathically fuck off to another dimension? Thank you. And I haven't got time, but I really am going to mention the current petition that's going around about the Department for Work and Pensions, DWP, calling for an independent inquiry into deaths that they may be involved in. Forget that revoke Article 50 petition. Please, 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 sign this one. If you go onto my Twitter timeline, you can't miss it. Or if you search under John Pring at Disability News Service, he has it there as well. Please sign this petition. Thank you. And I'm glad I haven't got time to mention some shitty football match that was going on. But I'm sure if the Remain people out on the People's Vote March had their way, it would be 27 lions on a shirt. That's it for Puck News. However, now I have a very special guest. Soaring above this week's top stories, I'm free flying with... My guest on this week's Free Flying With is a bit of a regular on the Topple Uncaged podcast. He is a journalist and commentator who launched one of the most successful, I think, independent websites that has been coming out of this country in quite a while. It is, of course, the man behind Universal Credit Sufferer, who has now spread his wings, not to use a canary pun, but he is leaving Universal Credit, fingers crossed, and doing a career now, hopefully, in journalism and commentating, which I have to say, I haven't even properly said it to him yet, which is terrible. I've been chatting to him off air for about 15 minutes, which I'm really pleased to hear that he's doing that because he is a real talent. He always has great insights. He has a wonderful way of being able to construct articles and information and put them across in a way that everyone can understand, which I think is crucial, especially in the current febrile climate. It is, of course, Universal Credit Sufferer himself. It is Alex Tiffin. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the Topple Uncaged podcast again.
No problem, Steve. It's always a joy to be on, and thank you for the kind words. You really didn't need to say that, you know. You'll make me blush.
Shut up. We're filming this in the wee hours of the morning, so, and it's a bit dark your end, so I can't see if you're blushing anyway, so don't worry about it. We have got quite a lot to get through this week. None of it, unfortunately, humorous, I'm afraid. Obviously, we can't avoid it. I like to try and leave the subject alone if I can, but we can't get away from Brexit this week. To bring listeners up to date then, so starting off with Brexit as the first story, we are recording this in the early hours of Friday, the 22nd of March. So where we're at this point, listeners, is that effectively Brexit has been definitely delayed until the 12th of April. Now, if May can get her deal past ministers for the third time, she'll be lucky. If she can get it past ministers, then the EU will be all like, all right, well, you can then leave on the 22nd of May. Obviously, there's been lots of fuss about this. How do you think this is going to pan out? I mean, are we looking at no deal and crashing out? Do you think MPs will take a deal? Do you think we're looking at a general election? Or do you think we will actually get a people's vote on this? What's your assessment of the situation and where we are at?
Well, right now, it's difficult to say because everything is so up in the air regarding the meaningful vote 3, as they're calling it. We don't even know if that's going to be able to be brought forward because Dom Bercow, the Speaker's already said, unless it's substantially different, you cannot bring it back. And nothing has changed. All the EU have said is, you vote for that deal or we're kicking you out early.
Yeah.
And that's it. I don't think we'll have a no deal because Parliament's never going to accept that. So we're either going to have a no confidence vote or they're going to be forced into adopting the people's vote. Now, I don't agree with the people's vote. I don't, you know, I didn't vote in the last referendum anyway because I didn't see, I didn't have enough information. I couldn't make an informed decision. But another referendum's just going to be just as divisive, and whichever side wins or whichever side loses is just going to cry foul again. So the only way, we need a general election where the parties put their clear Brexit policies forward, and we have to go from there. Whether that'll happen, I don't know, because it's that relies on a no confidence vote, and the Tories are so self-serving, even in the state the country is in because of Theresa May. I'm still not certain that they would back that vote.
I'm kind of, that's where I'm kind of at with it. I have a sneaking suspicion, looking at the Conservative Party and looking at what's happening, that certain elements of it probably wouldn't mind a general election. They wouldn't mind a general election because, for them, they're quite, the Conservative Party are very traditionally very long-term thinkers. They don't think in terms of one or two parliamentary terms. They think in terms of decades, because historically, Conservative Party has been a family affair where MPs have passed their seats over to their sons, etc., etc., and they're very long-term. And I personally think it's probably elements of the Conservative Party which would quite happily see a general election to allow Corbyn to get elected, to take over the entail and the fallout of Brexit, to make the inevitable probable catastrophe that it will be, so they can turn around and say, well, that bloody socialism doesn't work, you don't want that again. And I think there's elements of the Labour Party which quite happily see that as well, because Corbyn would essentially be clearing up a mess, and whether it was an irreconcilable mess or not remains to be seen, but it is going to be a mess. And I think I strongly believe there are elements of that in both the Tory and Labour Party which would quite happily see Corbyn elected just to be able to banish his form of socialism for decades and decades to come. Thoughts on that, or am I being a bit too conspiratorial?
It's a very, very good analysis. What with, you see what they're like when you talk about Venezuela and the dreaded socialism, and Brexit is so broken now, it might not be retrievable. So putting Corbyn in could be a no-brainer for them, where they can just destroy socialism and sit back and watch it. You know, they light in the match and walk away. That's effectively, David Cameron lit the match, and then Theresa May has poured on the petrol. Yeah. They're just going to throw some TNT on and walk off. That's it.
Yeah. This is what I think, and that's been a suspicion at the back of my mind all along, that because they will never allow him happily in, because not even because it's not really socialist, it's democratic socialism, which could possibly be kind of reformism, moving on to more socialist values, but, I mean, but they can never let him in, because not because of him, but because of the fact that he represents this groundswell of grassroots-led people's movement and people's voices being heard. That's what they don't want. It ain't nothing to do with Corbyn. But I want to talk about Theresa May's delightful speech outside Downing Street. Now, I'm not going to repeat any of this. It's not necessary, because I think most people listening to this podcast would have heard it. You did a fascinating move, if people aren't aware, which was you made an official complaint to the police, didn't you? Just talk the listeners through this in the wake of Theresa May's speech, why you did this, because I think it's actually really interesting, a very clever move.
Well, listening to her speech, it was, I can't say it's criminal, but I have. The way she spoke about MPs, it was dangerous. She is well aware of how heightened tensions are, especially about Brexit, and especially with like your yellow vesters that camp outside the House of Commons. So the fact that she blamed directly on them for holding up Brexit and possibly cancelling Brexit, that's incendiary. That's incitement of violence. And that has partly come true already, with Labour MP Andrew Gwynn being attacked yesterday because he doesn't believe in the current deal. And so I reported it to the Metropolitan Police, because if a member of the public spoke to millions of people, I can't say it is criminal, but at the very least it should be investigated, because while I may disagree with many, many MPs, MPs should be losing their seats. They shouldn't be at risk of losing their lives.
Incendiary is a major problem across society at the minute because it's becoming very feverish in the UK. And that brings us on to our next story. In Birmingham, that five mosques were attacked in the space of a matter of hours with each other. Alex, you're a Muslim. It must have been coordinated, surely, or at least there was a group of people who went out with this awful mindset to do this. I mean, what was your reaction to it? How do you feel about it?
Unfortunately, I wasn't surprised. You know, I was surprised at the number done, because usually I would expect, you maybe expect one, maybe two, but five is a very, very coordinated response. And a sledgehammer, you know, kids don't carry around sledgehammers. They needed vehicles to get about because it was all done very, very quickly across Birmingham. And it's concerning, especially given the wake of the New Zealand terror attack. And I wrote about this on an article for Medium, that the far right have played victim, while at the same time they've upped their rhetoric. And since last Friday, less than a week than the attack, Islamophobic incidents across the UK have rocketed. The day of the attack, after it came out that it had happened, a man was attacked with a hammer outside a mosque in London.
Yeah.
And then we had our incident in Surrey with the man who stabbed the young man in the supermarket car park. And then we've had two people arrested in Manchester for praising the New Zealand terror attack. And I think it's something like 15 I've heard across the news incidents, and I count the Birmingham one as one, since last Friday. And they seem emboldened, and it's worrying. You would think that being implicated in such a massive way with that manifesto, they would have kept their heads down. But no, they've come out fighting, and it's terrifying as a Muslim. I'm insulated partially because of where I live, but not completely. Our mosque was threatened to get, a man was jailed for threatening to burn down our mosque in January. You know, and this is in the Highlands, like one of the most tolerant places I know. So it's terrifying, and the media and the government, they own this. They caused this. The far right have a part in this, but it's the media and the politicians that whipped up the far right. The far right are a symptom. The cause is the media and the politicians. And shamelessly, some of, like, The Spectator, they come out and they're still pushing out the day after Islamophobia is a fake thing. And it's disgusting. Our media is so corrupt, it's so broken, it just disgusts me beyond anything.
No, I know, and like you say, I mean, it is terrifying, because it's a fascinating point, but also it's an extremely disconcerting point, really, you make, Alex, that you'd think after 50 people were murdered by this man in New Zealand, as you quite rightly point out, you'd think that anyone who sort of leans towards the far right would, as you say, sort of hold their heads down and go, yeah, okay, no, this is all going a bit too far now. Obviously not. And that is really, really scary, that even something like what happened in New Zealand still doesn't deter people and doesn't make them stop and think about what they're doing. I mean, is that symptomatic, do you think, of the situation that's unfolded since Brexit?
I think Brexit's played a big part. As it's been building for a while, but then Brexit bought UKIP and, like, these sort of minority parties more into the public eye.
I don't want to sound cliched, and everyone knows I'm not a huge Corbyn supporter and I'm not a Labour supporter, but is the only answer a Labour government to try and save us from this mess, or is that just going to actually make matters worse?
We are entering the end game, and
that's it.
Brexit is terrifying for what could happen. Obviously, the military activated their secret bunker on Monday underneath Downing Street, planning for a no-deal Brexit. And if Brexit doesn't happen, is where we will see the most violent.
Yeah.
No-deal Brexit is economic problems, but you know, your people's vote people aren't going to take to the streets and start smashing up windows and things like that. If Brexit is delayed for long term, if Article 50 is revoked, there will be riots and it will turn into a game of purge against the minorities because they'll just lose control. And it's terrifying. People, if Brexit is stopped, people are going to get hurt. When it comes to Brexit, I don't think there's a winner on any side. You know, I don't think any, it's unfixable. No one's, May has broken it so bad that I don't think it's possible to fix it. It's too late. And the shit's going to hit the fan at some point. And it's going to be the people that suffer, not them.
I think it's a very sober analysis, and I obviously, I hope you're wrong, but I think you're on the money with a lot of that. For the minute, Alex, I'm sure you'll be back on again to talk with more developments. Hopefully next time we'll have time to talk some Department for Work and Pensions related news, because that's something that never goes away. But Alex, much love to your family. I hope they're all okay as well after what happened to them. Some bastards who I hope they track down. For the minute, Alex Tiffin, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
No, thanks for having me on, Steve. It's always a pleasure, and all the best to you, Nick, and the wee one, and stay safe.
Time for you guys to be uncaged, because Twitter chirps back. Yes, I'd had about a gutful of question time, so I decided to remove the question time trouble chirps back section from Topple Uncaged. And instead, I'm handing it over to you, Twitter, to have your say on the biggest stories of the week. Every Thursday, I'll put out a tweet, and all you need to do is reply to it, and I'll read as many as I can out in the show as possible. So, what have we got here? Let me have a browse of my Twitter. Got the Trots, love that name. Got the Trots said, in reply to my tweet, if the press had done their job 2 years ago and held May and her mendacious government to account, we may have avoided this Brexit shambles. But they didn't. They chose to malign and try to destroy Corbyn and Labour. They are complicit in this chaos and the consequences to yet unfold. Yes, I completely agree. If you heard my section in the introduction of the show, that's pretty much what I said. The media have got a lot to answer for. Got the Trots. Who else? We've got Scalp. Scalp said, continuing closures and degradation of libraries. Yes, this is a huge story, isn't it? Bloody Theresa May on World Book Day coming up saying how wonderful libraries are. She's shut hundreds with her and her party over the past few years. But closing of libraries is less about people reading books, and it is more about shutting centres of organisation where working class people can go for free to use the internet to meet and to essentially become more involved in politics and social matters, in my opinion. Mr. Harry Haslam, thank you very much for your tweet. The Harry Has. He summed up my feelings completely. He put, why are people either shouting, no deal, we've been through worse, or remain, we've never had it so good, when the truth is, crash out and the bottom 25% will burn, or remain and go down the neoliberal plug hole with Europe. ECJ is good, but the rest, discuss. That pretty much sums up my opinion on this as well. Thank you, Harry. Ham777 said, more insight as to where DUP got their funding for Leave campaign, which they used in Britain, not own jurisdiction. Yes, where did the DUP get all that money from? Very interesting point, Ham. And my mate from the Canary, writer Glenn Black, said, another black man shot dead by cops and they claim he had a gun, carried out by the very dodgy and apparently racist West Midlands police, so you have to ask questions. Yes, I put the link to this in the show notes. There's been a video put up and lots of comments on a man murdered, allegedly, by police in Birmingham. Like I say, links to that will be in the show notes. Go and check it out. And to finish off with Sundancing Paul put, perhaps this explains why the UK press supports hashtag Tories. And he put a picture of several interesting headlines, but also a nice tweet by EL4C, which said, almost 80% of our press is owned by a handful of mostly foreign-based billionaires. Yes, we have one of the most corrupt press in one of the most corrupt societies in the, quote, Western world. That's all for this week's Twitter Chirps Back. I'll be putting out a tweet next week, and once again, please, please, please get involved with that. Have your say. You won't get to on question time.
This is Cali P, the Lyrical Fire, and right now you're in tune to Mr. Tuffle Uncaged. Yeah, man, big up Mr. Tuffle, big man himself. We're there, Cali P, the Lyrical Fire, chilling. Hey, don't change the thing. We're there, tune in.
And here's this week's banger in Revolutionary Birdsong. I travel the four corners of the globe on my podcast every week with my musical guests from Jamaica to the US. I've got someone coming up from Australia soon. However, we are back home to Blighty this week because I think the UK reggae scene is sorely under-talked about, and hopefully my next guest this week will redress the balance. He is an extremely seasoned artist. He has had some banging tunes in the past, and I had the privilege of listening to four new tracks of his, which are coming up soon. Two very soon, hopefully. Here to talk about that and more is the legend that is Whitey. Whitey, thank you so much for coming on the Topple Uncaged podcast.
Nice, man. Thanks, man. Good to be here.
It's great to have you on. I think we're going to have some really interesting perspectives on not only UK reggae scene, but we're going to have to talk about UK politics as well.
Okay.
But we will get on to that later. So, four new tracks I've had the privilege of listening to.
Cool.
They're fascinating because when I listened to them several times, and on the first kind of glance listen, if you like, they're overtly reggae tracks. They've got all reggae sensibilities. You've got the bubble pattern going on, which immediately strikes home what kind of genre you're in. Delve a little deeper, and they're not as straightforward as that. Take Common Sense, for example. Now, I love this. Yeah. I think it was brilliant. So, bubble pattern's going on throughout it. However, you've got the hip-hop kind of drums, which take it into a nice different area. You've almost got tinges of what I'd say was kind of grime with the hi-hats and cymbals. That kind of going on.
Trappy, grimy sound.
Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. I loved it to bits. But for me, the favourite track was the fourth track I listened to, Again with the Inner Heart Band, which, of course, Nut Na Gwan. I mean, it's a stunning, stunning piece of work. It's quite moving for starters, but the production of it and your vocals, especially on it, are just wonderful. And reading a bit about your history, you grew up around a D&B, a drum and bass producer was one of your friends, wasn't he? So was it kind of an influence from a younger age which has given you that this kind of musical diversity that is kind of there's an undercurrent of in your overly sensible reggae? Is that where this musical diversity comes from, your kind of your upbringing and what you listened to growing up?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I think the first music I ever liked as a little kid was like ska, two-tone and ska and that kind of stuff. And then the person you're talking about, Digital, his dad owned a sound system as well, so he was into reggae first, you know, like he grew up with reggae, obviously, in his house and everything. So I liked, you know, like all pop, some pop songs, you know, when you're a little kid, some little pop songs and ska and whatever. And then, yeah, it was reggae for me. I was sort of really sort of, what's the word, belligerent about it at first, you know what I mean? And then, because a lot of people getting into hip hop around the same time, but I didn't really do the hip hop or the electro and all that. Well, I was aware of it, didn't mind some of it, you know, like Herbie Hancock, Rocket, and things like that. Liked it, but wasn't my thing at all. You know, I mean, I was onto the reggae thing, was trying to get in blues parties at that time. You know what I mean? And went through that, and then sort of, as you know, like 89, 90, is when the rave scene started, and a lot of the sound system guys, a lot of guys that were around me, a lot of the sort of road man kind of guys that I knew as well, they all started going raves. I didn't really go. I didn't really get into it until like 94, when it was like the real sort of jungle era, you know what I mean? Like the jungle fever and that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But I didn't really get into it up to that point. And then I started MCing at some clubs. You know, like we resident MC'd at Oscars, me and my friend Bucky. MC Junior, who's passed away in 2011 still, but we used to go Oscars, and you know, I've done a lot of jungle and different bits and pieces, do you know what I mean? So I've got sort of all kind of influences in it.
I mean, like I said, it absolutely comes through in the four latest tracks. Do you know what I'm really interested in? You're from Ipswich, which is, for listeners who don't know, Ipswich is a rather provincial country town in the southeast of Suffolk. That's where I'm from. I'm an Ipswich. I'm a Suffolk boy. That's where I grew up. Was it hard to break into sort of reggae as you have done, and as you say, emceeing, and also becoming an artist from Ipswich, from Suffolk, which isn't exactly known, apart from Ed Sheeran now, obviously, particularly known for like musicians that sort of managed to get into the profession. How difficult was it for you?
It's a mad thing how it happened, really. I just liked the music, and I just used to kind of imitate the music privately. Do you know what I mean? As a little kid, you know, we had Joe Warriors in Ipswich as well. Do you know Joe Warriors?
Yeah.
Right, so Joe Warriors, that kind of, I think they were like what made it seem like it could be possible. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I knew them, like Gordon is still the person, like Gordon is Inner Heart, who plays the two tracks. Not Nagwan, the Next Man Wife, but Inner Heart Band. He's the bass player from Joe Warriors, and his brother Pops, who also played on them, was the keyboardist in that. So because I knew them lot and all that, it was mad, and you could go down Murrayside Youth Club and watch them rehearse and all that. And I remember the first thing I ever went to, like properly allowed to go out, and I went to a Ethiopian famine relief concert. I think it was about 82 or 83. And it was Joe Warriors at the Corn Exchange with a sound system called Macatone, owned by my friend Papa Goose. And that was the first time I'd never seen anything. I didn't even know what a sound system was up to that point. And that was it. I was completely captivated. I was straight up to the tower like this, just mesmerised. You know what I mean? And then Joe Warriors, you know. So all of that was like, I think that was like the first proper inspiration. At that point, I liked sort of all, you know, like, I used to get my music from like Parrot Records and Andy's Records. So all I could get...
Oh, I remember Andy's Records. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So... all I could get was what was available in them shops. So it was like Aswad, Steel Pulse, sort of Virgin collections of things and sort of... it's like, but a limited range, do you know what I mean? Like, what I could hear on the radio, like sometimes if you listen to Rodigan on Radio London or something, them tunes that he was playing, you couldn't buy them in a shop in Ipswich. I didn't realise that you had to go to London to the proper record shops and all that at that point, do you know what I mean? So I'd had all that music and I liked all that, and then Joe Warriors kind of pushed it. So I was just... and then Musical Youth as well, I have to mention Musical Youth, that was another thing, because I was like the same age, do you know what I mean? So I could chat all them lyrics privately. So what used to happen when I was hanging with my friends and having a smoke or whatever, boom, I'd start doing it, I'd start spitting some of them lyrics, like spit some old Yellow Man lyrics or whatever, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And they're like, oh fucking hell man, you sound like a black man, you know, you know what I mean? Used to mash up their head with it, innit? Like, we're only like 13 or something at that time, 13, 14, and so that was how it was, isn't it? Like, few handful of people knew that I could do it, sort of thing. I went to a dance as a customer, isn't it? Ashanti versus Field Marshall, this is 87 by this point. The guy whose yard it was came and got me out of the crowd and said, no man, you got to come and chat on the mic. And I was like, no fucking way am I chatting on the mic, you must be mad. Because my thing was, I always thought people would be angry. Do you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? And get, do you know what I mean? And then at the end of that night, Ruben, he's one of the members of Ashanti, he came up to me at the end of the night and he was like, yo, I want you to move with the sound from now on, you know, I want you to stay with the sound. But for me, that was like getting signed like by Man United or something. That was like, what? You know what I mean? Ashanti. Because Ashanti was our hero. We used to follow them around, you know what I mean? So, and that was it. So I started to go around with Ashanti, and obviously that was had a lot of impact. There was a few white boys doing it at the time, white people doing it at the time, but no one, like Dominic was doing it around the same time. 87 is like around the same time Favourite Boy George came out and stuff like that, but it wasn't like a widespread thing at that time, you know what I mean? And so that was impactful.
You've been very prolific over the years. There was two songs which I want to talk about which you did, which stood out for me. Firstly was England Story. Just because it was on that it was on Baby Sham Rhythm, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously you changed what they did and put it into the context of you. Just an absolutely staggeringly it's still pertinent, to be honest. It's still got relevance now. Really, you're on fire on that. My girl, because I put it off my girlfriend, and she went, Big Nasty needs to get him on his show, because Big Nasty uses that. I don't know if you've seen the Big Nasty show on Channel 4. For listeners at home, if you don't know, Big Nasty is a grime artist.
I've seen the show. I know what you mean.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he uses the Baby Sham Rhythm as his introduction.
Oh, yeah, I think I have even seen him do that, now you say it. Yeah.
So, and she was like,
watch one or two.
Yeah, he uses that rhythm, and my girlfriend's like, yeah, he needs to get Whitey on to do his version of it.
I don't think that man are too feeling my thing. I remember seeing Big Nasty at doing Wicked Act, you know. I was doing stings for Wicked Act for Channel U, Mm-hmm. And Big Nasty was like, yeah, man, you sound like my mum.
What?
And I don't know how he took that. I didn't know how to take that. Do you know what I mean? He didn't say it in a... He didn't seem really aggressive or offensive, or he just said that and kept it moving. Do you know what I mean? And I was like... And I get that. You know, like, you have to... I reckon... Do you know what? I don't even have a problem with that. I accept that, like, because the UK hip-hop movement originally, that was the thing, having an English accent. So, obviously, I'm not... Do you see what I mean? I'm the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So, I get why some people might not really approve of what I'm doing or... not like it or whatever, do you know what I mean? So I don't think, I'm not sure if Big Nasty would want me on this show, is what I'm getting at, but still.
How important is it to you to have a political and social message behind the music you're doing? Is it kind of top up there for you?
I can't help it, do you know what I mean? Like, it's the way it's like the first thing that grabbed me was like the Levi at the beginning of the Coffin Up Fire album going, yeah, the other day, I cussed Margaret Thatcher and like, as a little kid, that just had me. I was like, oh my God, this is it. Do you know what I mean? Like, talking about, you can talk about what's actually, you know, what you find is mad and all that. And so I always lean towards that, even when I try to do more bashier things. I've done some slackness and all kind of tunes in the past, but mostly I try and do reality. Do you know what I mean? That's my thing. Always has. Like, the first lyric I wrote, the one I'm telling you about, the rabbit in the headline lyric, was, been a like Watagwanong in a South Africa. And do you know what I mean? Like, it was about apartheid and everything. So that's always been my thing.
Yeah, have you got a schedule and agenda yet of when things are dropping? Do you know?
All right, so Common Sense, we're shooting the video on Sunday.
Oh, me
and Newtown Kings NTK Productions. That's their first thing as NTK Productions. They're a ska band, the Newtown Kings from Colchester. Doing really well around the world and everything. But some of the members have started this NTK thing.
Yeah.
And this is the first thing on the, you know, on that sort of imprint. And we're doing the video on Sunday, and the aim is to have that out in May. Same with Next Man Wife. The video is now finished. I'm doing the last part of that on Saturday, shooting the last part of the video. I don't have a date for that yet, but hope that should be around a similar time. Obviously, I don't want it to clash with the Common Sense one, but I also want to get it out before festival season. So, like, once you hit, like, June and that, it gets a bit late for releasing stuff during the summer. But then again, those are, like, the traditional views of how to release stuff. All of that's kind of gone out the window now anyway, but we'll see. So I don't have solid dates for the other three, but the first one, Common Sense, will be out definitely in May.
Whitey, it's been a real treat to talk to you. I really enjoyed chatting to you. And I am up in Suffolk on the monthly, as it were, to see my mum, who literally just lives probably a few doors down from you. So we'll have to properly hook up sometime.
Yeah, man, do it. Have a cup of tea.
Whatever we fancy. Whitey, exactly. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, man. Bless.
How good is he, Whitey, a man from my original ends in Suffolk? He's great, and his four new tracks are absolutely brilliant. As he says, Common Sense will be out in May, but this is my personal favourite of them all. It is Nut Nugwan. Here it is, Nut Nugwan.
Everywhere we come, we hear the people, them balling. Some don't hit since morning. Them said the way the world are run right now. Them don't know where we done right now. Them a ball said, Nut Nugwan. The little youth them in the street, them still a see the food we eat. Them a say Nut Nugwan. The place hotter than fire, more seller than buyer. No, Nut Nugwan. You know it, holding the pressure, hoping for better car. Nut Nugwan. And that's why you the road around so wild. Oh, me say money where you tell you been gone so long. Lady luck is like she gone missing. I know me happy, got to do something about this situation. It don't make sense just sitting down wishing. And we know it wicked out the street. Too much shatter beat, too much blood a leak. Too much mother weed from the other week. Me tight for see the reed, flowers in the street. While the bigger heads are act like them don't see it. And meanwhile, nothing happen. We out there looking for the hustle in the children suffering. Nothing happen. You know we holding the pressure, still hoping for better car. Nut Nugwan. They said them keeping it pushing, cause money we looking down. Nut Nugwan. And the worst we ever see from we man. What they really expect, who'd take place next? When you neglect the youth and treat them like we reject and not vex. The decision you're forced to make is a matter of life and death. In the streets, if I go step, looking anything they can get. Be a big machine, them a select, and as you queen, them stop your breath. Almighty guide and protect me in every step they tight take. I write you now, not never. The little youth, them in the street, them still a see the food we eat, them a say, not never. I'm more seller than buyer. Why is that a than fire? No, not never.
And that's it. Episode 19 of Top Line Caged is done. I'd like to thank my fantastic guest this week, the incredible Alex Tiffin. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Prospective Vital. Also, the fantastic Whitey. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Whitey Reggae. As always, behind the scenes, thank you to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. My man in the booth, sound engineer Gav Paws. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Paws with the Z Radio. And my in-house singer, it's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Ray underscore star 113. Last but not least, thank you to the Canary for uncaging me. Hopefully, we'll have less chaos next week, but I doubt it. See you next Sunday.
Uncaged.